Rousseau seems to say that the law may indeed discriminate, granting special privileges to some and withholding them from others, just so long as specific individuals are not singled out. This discrimination clearly negates the protection supposedly afforded to the individual by the law's universality. But does universality actually provide this protection? Imagine a law requiring everyone to profess a certain religion, much like the civil religion Rousseau later proposes. Wouldn't such a law infringe on the freedom of followers of different faiths, and on atheists for that matter? Yet if the law is merely the expression of the general will, as Rousseau maintains, it cannot infringe on freedom. The precise nature of the general will is rendered more questionable by a famous passage in the Social Contract.
When a law is proposed in the People's Assembly, what is asked of them is not precisely whether they approve of the proposition or reject it, but whether it is in conformity with the general will which is theirs. Each, by giving his vote, gives his opinion on this question, and the counting of votes yields a declaration of the general will. When, therefore, the opinion contrary to my own prevails, this proves only that I have made a mistake, and that what I believed to be the general will was not so. If my particular opinion had prevailed against the general will, I should have done something other than what I had willed, and then I should not have been free.
In voting, the citizens offer their opinions, or guesses, on what the general will is. Rousseau seems to say that the general will is not a will in any ordinary sense, not even the will of a collective. It is an abstraction, standing for what is good, just, and useful for the whole body. This brings up an alarming question. Is it possible that the true general will can be discovered by a small self-appointed elite, which is well-informed and which has only the good of society at heart? During the French Revolution and the Reign of Terror, a group of men known as the Jacobins represented only a minority of the people. Were they nonetheless the real bearers of the general will, as they claimed to be? Rousseau appears to make the general will an abstraction, with no necessary link to the will of the people. At the same time, he endows it with absolute power. Is this engine of totalitarian control now available to any group of zealots who feel they have the truth and know what is best for society, regardless of what the other members of society may think? Some supporters of Rousseau mitigate these totalitarian inferences by directing attention to other passages of his works. One example of this is the long article he wrote for the encyclopedia titled Political Economy, which appeared 7 years before The Social Contract. Here, Rousseau sketches a theory of the state, utilizing the concept of the general will. He also addresses the question of protecting the individual's life and liberty.
If someone were to tell us that it is good that one person should perish for all, I would admire this saying when it comes from the lips of a worthy and virtuous patriot who dedicates himself willingly and out of duty to die for the welfare of his country. But if this means that the government is permitted to sacrifice an innocent person for the welfare of the multitude, I hold this maxim to be one of the most despicable that tyranny has ever invented, and the most directly opposed to the fundamental laws of society. For far from it being the case that one individual should die for all have committed their goods and lives in defense of each of them, so that individual weakness would always be protected by public force and each member by the entire state.
The Rousseau who wrote this would have been horrified by the wholesale violations of individual rights performed in his name by the Jacobins during the Reign of Terror. His defenders would add that Rousseau's ideal society, the one which the social contract suited perfectly, is quite a small one. Did Rousseau believe then that the great monarchies of his time were illegitimate? Not necessarily.
Any state which is ruled by law, I call a republic, whatever the form of its constitution, for then and then alone does the public interest govern, and then alone is the public thing the res publica a reality. If it is to be legitimate, the government must not be united with the sovereign, but must serve it as a ministry. So even a monarchy can be a republic.
But can the law be declared by the people in person each and every time?
This is not to say that the commands of leaders may not pass for the general will if the sovereign, being free to oppose them, does not do so. In such a case, the silence of the people permits the assumption that the people consents.
The silence of the people. The general will cannot be represented, but it can often be assumed from the silence of the people when they have the power to override the government. In Rousseau's article on political economy, he further reduces the need for the people to declare the general will explicitly.
How, I will be asked, does one go about knowing the general will in the situation where it is not expressed? Must the whole nation be assembled at each unforeseen event? It ought the less to be assembled because it is not sure its decision would be the expression of the general will. Because this means is unworkable for a large populace, and because it is rarely necessary when the government is well-intentioned. For the leaders know very well that the general will is always on the side most favorable to the public interest, that is, the most equitable, so that it is necessary simply to be just, to be assured of following the general will.
Rousseau appears to say that his views apply to countries with large populations. After all, in most cases, the government need not consult the people, but can assume the general will on the basis of what is just and right. Over 10 years after the publication of The Social Contract, however, when Rousseau wrote his self-justification, titled Rousseau, Judge of Jean-Jacques, he took pains to deny that the social contract referred to populist states such as France. Rousseau states this denial in third person.
His object could not be to bring back large populations and big states to the initial simplicity, but only to arrest, if possible, the progress of those small and isolated enough for their preservation from the perfection of society and the deterioration of the species. Perversely, one wished to see a promoter of subversion and troubles in the man who is most prone to respect national laws and constitutions, and who has the strongest aversion for revolution.
Defenders of Rousseau stress that the social contract refers exclusively to small states. In a small state, they claim, a truly uncoerced consensus is more likely to emerge. This minimizes the need to force the dissident individual to be free. But other aspects of Rousseau point in a different, more totalitarian direction. A monarchy can constitute a republic. A king can carry out the general will. And large populations need not be consulted directly. The whole tenor of the social contract also points in this direction. Anyone who reads the beginning of this book, Man was born free and is everywhere in chains, and so on, would be forgiven for thinking Rousseau is offering a general theory of political legitimacy applicable to states large and small. But Rousseau's defenders retort that his method was to make a large claim only to introduce successive qualifications. And so the debate continues. Rousseau's account of the formation of the state contains a serious gap. Given that the population comes together and forms a corporate body known as a state through the social contract, how do the members instantly become capable of acting like virtuous citizens? The moment before the social contract, Rousseau considers man to be nothing more than a stupid and limited animal.